Why dead carbon was easier to control, and why it's failing us now. Fossil plastics didn't take over the modern world because they were better materials. They took over because they were easier to control. Oil and gas come from plants and trees that once lived, but after millions of years buried deep within the Earth's crust under heat and pressure, everything that once allowed them to participate in living systems was stripped away. What remains is carbon that no longer has a working relationship with water and no longer behaves in ways that allow living systems to adjust, repair, and reorganize themselves. From a material standpoint, it is inert, and that inertness turned out to be incredibly useful. These materials don't self-organize back into biology when conditions change. They don't re-enter cycles through water, microbes, and time. Any meaningful change must be imposed from the outside by industrial heat, pressure, and force. Heat them and they flow. Cool them and they lock into place. Shape them once and they stay that way. They do exactly what we tell them to do. That obedience made plastics easy to manufacture, easy to standardize, and easy to scale. It also made them fundamentally incompatible with life. What changes when structure is lost? Rather than argue about whether materials are quote-unquote alive, consider something familiar. Take a raw steak. In its raw state, muscle tissue remains structurally organized. When a small electrical current is applied, the same kind of signal your nervous system uses, that tissue can still respond, twitching, tightening, and briefly contracting, echoing the rhythm of a heartbeat. Once you cook it, that ability is gone forever. The meat is still there, the molecules are still there, but the internal organization that allowed response has been permanently fixed. You can't uncook it. This is not just a biological story. It is an industrial one. For example, modern pulp and paper follow the same principle as cooked meat. Once internal structure is permanently altered, responsiveness is lost. Trees, grasses, and plants begin as layered, hydrated, responsive systems. Fibers aligned, bound, and supported by water-mediated relationships. Pulping intentionally breaks those relationships so the material can be shaped, dried, and stabilized. The material survives. The organization does not. This distinction between material that remains responsive and material that has been permanently fixed is not a flaw of papermaking. It is the foundation of modern industry, and it quietly shaped everything that followed. How we learn to make nature behave. For most of industrial history, this wasn't arrogance. It was constraint. Chemistry worked like a blunt instrument. Heat, pressure, and bulk reactions were the only tools available. When we encounter biological complexity, we overwhelmed it until it behaved. We simplified living systems, just enough to make them manageable. Predictable performance came at the cost of lost internal structure. That trade-off wasn't a failure. It was the price of scale with payment deferred, not forgiven. Deferred costs don't disappear in complex systems. They reappear later as accumulated risk, showing up as remediation expense, health burden, supply chain fragility, and liabilities that were never priced at the moment of design. Scale didn't eliminate the cost. It moved it forward in time and outward in space, until no single actor could see the whole bill. This is how systems appear efficient, right up until they aren't. Not because anyone made the wrong choice, but because the logic that optimized for control had no way to account for what accumulation does at scale. Entropy always collects its due. Everything in the universe tends toward balance. A hot cup of coffee cools. A stretched rubber band snaps back. A pile of sand spreads out. Physics calls this tendency entropy. Plastics are made by pushing carbon far out of balance, pulling ancient material back to the surface, forcing it into rigid forms, and demanding that it stay that way. Nature resists that demand. From the moment plastic is made, the world begins pulling it apart, not into something useful, but into smaller and smaller fragments of the same thing. All those fragments shrink. They cross a threshold, becoming what we now call microplastics. Recycling can slow this process. It can grind plastic down, melt it again, reshape it. But every cycle requires more energy and leaves fewer options behind. Irreversibility is not a bug of the system. It's the bill coming due. Designing single-use materials for a global food system, where most people no longer control how their food is grown or processed, is like releasing confetti everywhere and then wondering why cleanup never ends. The problem isn't behavior. It's physics. And physics doesn't negotiate. Scale didn't solve the problem. It hit it, until accumulation made it impossible to ignore. Participation scales. Accumulation scales faster. Accumulation doesn't spread risk. It concentrates it. When material stops circulating, exposure doesn't disappear. It accumulates in specific places, in supply chains, in ecosystems, and ultimately in bodies. Over time, that concentration turns a design choice into a systemic liability. Why this feels wrong immediately? Long before studies or statistics, there is a simpler truth people recognize instinctively. No one wants microplastics inside their bodies or inside their children. Microplastic fragments now show up in blood, lungs, placentas, and developing tissue. Outside the body, they disrupt soil health, damage marine ecosystems, and interfere with the smallest organisms that support entire food webs. No living system evolved with a pathway to metabolize this material. That doesn't mean every harm has been mapped or measured. It means we are introducing something biology never prepared for and then calling the results uncertainty. There is no such thing as waste in nature. In nature, there is no quote-unquote away, only inputs to the next process. There are byproducts, there are leftovers, but there is no place where material goes when the system no longer knows what to do with it. Living systems don't manage waste. They avoid creating it. Composting isn't disposal, it's renewal. The same carbon that once wrapped food becomes the soil that grows the next harvest. When a material requires management after it's made, something has already gone wrong. Waste is not a logistics problem. It's a design problem. Management begins where design failed. Coherence is how life avoids collapse. Living systems don't survive by fighting entropy. They survive by maintaining coherence, by keeping relationships intact so energy, water, and material can keep moving. Carbon cycles. Water circulates. Nutrients return. Coherence isn't perfection. It's continuity. Break continuity, and you don't get disorder. You get buildup. When those relationships are broken, accumulation replaces flow. In living systems, that accumulation doesn't stay abstract. It shows up as bioaccumulation, materials concentrating where circulation has failed. This is not a future scenario. It is the sensation people are already responding to. The library we forgot how to read. Long before humans had chemistry, nature did. Enzymes are the original chemists of the planet. They enable change without brute force, recognizing shape and fit, guiding transformation instead of overwhelming it. That's how plants grow. That's how food becomes energy. That's how life builds complexity without collapse. For most of human history, we couldn't do this. We knew how to break things apart, not how to take them apart. Now we're getting new hands. The same science that allows a simple mouse swab to identify a criminal, connect distant relatives, or reconstruct family trees has unlocked something else. Advances in computing power and artificial intelligence now allow us to model, design, and rapidly evolve enzymes on purpose. For thousands of years, humanity learned how to domesticate plants and animals, selecting species and traits that shaped how they grew, behaved, and endured. What's new is that we now understand those choices not just at the surface, but internally. How species, seed genetics, and growing conditions determine the microscopic structure of a plant, how its fibers form, how its components bind, and how its internal architecture holds together. That understanding changes what comes next. If we can intentionally shape a plant's internal structure as it grows, we can also design how it is separated later, how it comes apart, what can be preserved, and what kinds of materials it can ultimately become. This is not extraction optimized after harvest. It is material intention embedded upstream. Instead of forcing biomass into obedience after the fact, we are beginning to design from the beginning, allowing what we grow with what we intend to separate, shape, and ultimately make. We didn't suddenly become wiser. We became far more precise about where, when, and how we intervene. A different industrial logic. Once this distinction is clear, the limits of our current industrial logic come into focus. If materials are meant to participate in living systems, they cannot be handled the way fossil materials are. They can't depend on being hauled long distances to a handful of giant, centralized mills, then forced into compliance through scale and energy alone. That doesn't mean every product becomes local. It means the most structure-sensitive steps, separation, preservation, and early valorization have to move closer to where biomass actually grows. More specialized manufacturing can still consolidate downstream, but only after the material's internal options have been preserved. Plants are not inert feedstock. They are layered systems. To work with them, they must be separated in a way that keeps each component in its original functional state. More like raw steak than cooked meat. This does not mean materials are never fixed into final forms. It means the moment of fixation matters. Cooking the steak is not the mistake. Cooking it before you've separated, preserved, and understood its internal structure is. Once structure is prematurely locked, options disappear. When fixation is delayed until after separation and design, it becomes a choice, not a loss. This points toward a different industrial logic. Instead of a few enormous refineries designed to overwhelm material into compliance, that logic favors many smaller distributed systems. Localized biorefineries embedded where biomass already flows. Their role is not to extract one thing and discard the rest, but to separate the whole plant into usable parts while those parts are still intact. Several emerging approaches are beginning to operate in this space. One example is a platform known as GreenKey, which applies precisely tuned fluid motion and kinetic energy to fractionate biomass at ambient conditions, preserving native functionality rather than collapsing it. The name matters less than what it represents, a shift toward using the entire plant, locally, so value remains where the material originates. Over time, these systems will likely co-locate with composting and food infrastructure, forming a kind of membrane around communities, places where nutrients return to soil, materials are separated at the source, and food systems and material systems are renewed together. Packaging and everyday goods would no longer arrive from far away as finished objects, but emerge from the same local cycles that feed the people who use them. The choice we're actually facing. This isn't about replacing one material with another. It's about choosing whether we design systems that participate or systems that accumulate. Every living system that endures does so by keeping relationships intact. Break those relationships and matter stops flowing. It piles up, first in soil, then in water, then in bodies. This is not an abstract warning. It's a sensation people already recognize. The discomfort isn't confusion. It's recognition. This isn't a future we debate into existence. It's a future that arrives when the old one stops working. The question isn't whether nature can support us. It's whether we are willing to support the conditions that allow life to keep moving. The future of materials would not be managed at the end of life. It will be shaped at the beginning by whether we design for participation or for control. Nature has already written most of the instruction manual. The only question left is whether we trust what our bodies already know and finally have the courage to work with it.